Welcome back to the Mac Express, the show where we dive into the sport, business, and culture of show jumping. We've got a packed episode for you today, including an exclusive interview with Michael Lenard, the co-founder of Horsespot, who is bringing a fresh digital energy to the sport and building something truly exciting. But before we get to that, let's kick things off with what's happening right now in the world of international show jumping. The new Longines FEI jumping rankings are out, and just like the sport itself, it's dynamic, it's competitive, and it's full of shakeups. Sitting comfortably at number one, no surprise, is Kent Farrington as he continues to dominate. With 3,359 points, Kent's consistency over the past few months has not only kept him on top, it's given him a bit of a cushion from the rest of the field. He is the benchmark right now. No one's pushing harder or riding cleaner when it counts. But the real drama this month is the climbers. Let's talk about the biggest movers inside the top 10. So who's climbing right now? Christian Kukuk moves from number 4 to number 3, now holding 3,064 points. His incredible partnership with his horses has really enabled him to a meteoric rise. Steve Girdow, the Swiss legend, rises from number 6 to number 4. He's making it clear that the experience is still king. Richard Vogel makes a 3-spot jump to number 6. At just 27 years old, he's proving he belongs in the sport's elite circles. Scott Brash is back in the top 10, climbing from number 12 to number 7. His recent finishes show he's far from done. Daniel Coyle delivers the most exciting move from number 16 to number 9. Coyle's had a red-hot Nations Cup season, and the numbers reflect it. So, the dropping, McLean Ward drops from number 5 to number 8. Henrik von Eckermann slips from number 3 to number 5. That's the top 10 thus far. Events to watch this week. We have two major events. The Dublin Horse Show, one of the sport's most historic and iconic venues. It's always going to be stacked to have amazing talent and some great Nations Cup action. And then the other one that I'm really excited to watch this week is Major League Show Jumping in Traverse City. Modern, high-stakes format with serious horsepower and huge team energy, plus home turf with a lot of top-ranked U.S. riders. So we're going to see some great show jumping this week from both venues. I highly encourage you to check it out. From the rankings to reinvention, so let's shift gears a little bit here. If you've been around the horse sport long enough, you've probably noticed something. For a sport built on precision and performance, we've been a little slow to adopt digital innovation, especially when it comes to how we connect, market, and grow. That's where today's guest comes in. Michael Lenard is the co-founder of Horsespot, the fastest growing show management platform in the equestrian sport. Alongside his brother, Chris Lenard, who developed the software, the two have brought a fresh tech-forward approach to a space they know intimately, because they've lived it. The Lenard brothers came from a background in show management themselves, and they've built Horsespot to solve real problems from the ground up. From real-time results and streamlined scheduling to rider discovery and fan engagement, Horsespot is redefining the digital experience of show jumping for everyone involved. In today's interview, we'll talk about the why behind Horsespot, what's broken in the equestrian media and management, and where the future is headed for athletes, organizers, and fans alike. This conversation is packed with vision, insight, and energy. So without further ado, here's my sit down with Michael Lenard of Horsespot. Michael, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so kind of the origin story of this. So you are a lifelong equestrian. So let's start right at the beginning. What's the story behind Horsespot? Where did it come from? What are the specific points that really lit the fuse that you and your brother wanted to start this?
Hey, it's a great question, and I actually love telling the story because it really is, you know, a lifelong journey. My mother was a lifelong rider herself and was competing, and the only reason she stopped was because I'm the oldest, and she started to have kids. Got back into it, and I quickly followed suit. So I think I started riding when I was around 6 or 7 years old, and you know, and following her to the barn, and caught the bug really quick. Now my brother is 4 years younger than me, and he was getting dragged along too. And actually, it's sort of funny because he didn't even start riding himself originally, and you know, but was getting dragged along everywhere. And then finally one day, you know, pulled my mom aside and was like, "Well, you know, since I'm here, anyways." So then, you know, our entire childhoods, we were all riding. You know, my mom, myself, and my brother at the barn. We had horse showing. We were lucky enough to be able to to do all that. My dad, you know, can get on a horse and can walk, trot, and canter, and made sure to take enough lessons that he could, you know, kind of keep up. And all of that led to ending high school, going on to college, starting to ride for Northern Illinois University's equestrian team. And then the coach, Jolene DeWitt, connecting me and getting me my first summer job working at horse shows. And they were the same horse shows that I was going to in the Chicago area growing up, all the horse shows that were at Lamplight and at Ledges. And so I was really familiar with them. But now I had an opportunity to be on the management side. And it started working to manage all the awards, getting ribbons out to the rings, you know, being there for the awards presentations, getting the cooler on the horse, getting the ribbon. You
the
know.
Important things.
And that's right. That's right. And but it was, I didn't know it at the time, but it was the beginnings of establishing relationships with trainers and show staff and announcers and judges that I still have relationships with now. And those guys are helping to open up the doors for Horse Spot. And I'm very appreciative of that. So these, you know, these management jobs were like summer gigs. Mm. And but I was absolutely loving it and entrenched in the horses because I was riding all the time and then would go back to school and would ride on the equestrian team. And graduated from college and continued to stay involved in horse show management on the side. Mm-hmm. Largely because I was still going to those same horse shows and riding myself. Mm-hmm. And then started dating a girl who was a professional and she was bringing customers to all the horse shows. So we were just there all the time. Mm-hmm. And so of course, like, you know, I wanted to work. I wanted to continue to stay involved. I'd learned how to be an office secretary at by this point, you know. And
the
was,
most thankless job in the industry.
Boy, tell me about it. And, you know, but at the same time, like such a wealth of knowledge when you're the actual secretary, because you learn all these different aspects of how to actually run shows and why all of these weird rules have to happen in the first place. Mm-hmm. And so it just teaches you to be an expert. And I was lucky enough to be doing this with Pat and Nicole Boyle, mm-hmm. who, you know, really kind of took me under their wing. And, you know, not only was I an employee, but, you know, but they really kind of treated me like part of the inner circle. Mm-hmm. And so then, you know, my brother followed suit because he needed the job too. And started, you know, working in the office in the summers. All of this kind of fast forwarded to both of us, you know, now being out of college, we're professionals. I got my degree in accounting, got my CPA, and was working full-time in public accounting in downtown Chicago. Mm-hmm. Christopher moved on. He actually got his master's degree in software engineering and then, you know, was working, developing his career as a full-stack developer and working for some impressive companies, working on impressive projects. And but the whole time, staying involved with show management on the side, especially on my part, because I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And as I matured, took on higher level office secretary roles, started to get into judging, and then also started to get into managing some of my own smaller unrated shows. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then fast forward to late 2022, and this is where we'll get into the origin story on Horse Spot. Mm-hmm. Christopher calls me up and he gets credit for the idea. And he says, hey, I can smell it coming. My, you know, the tech company that I'm working for right now is going to be doing some layoffs. Mm. And so he's like, so I'm thinking about what I want to do next, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'm looking at some open roles that are out there, but I'm also thinking maybe it's time to go the entrepreneurial route. And if I did go that route, I would want to do something in the horse world. And it all kind of goes back to focusing on a better competition management tool. Mm-hmm. And it didn't take long to sell me because, you know, again, I just enjoyed the show management side of things so much and coincidentally had already been having some conversations with some other folks in the industry. Some, you know, that were on the show management side, some that were actually, you know, coming in and I knew actually through the private equity world of the consulting firm that I was working for.
Interesting.
But he had overlap into another business that was getting into media operations in the horse world and was also thinking about, you know, well, the best way to really do that would be to marry what we're doing in media and video with, you know, a full suite competition management tool that, mm-hmm. you know, can really do that. And when I look around at all of the available options, there aren't any that I'm really interested in.
Right.
And so this all, you know, started the talk about Horse Spot. Mm-hmm. the talk led to, you know, to Christopher starting to actually like build out the basics of the platform. And by March of 2023, we were ready to go live with an MVP. Mm-hmm.
Those who don't know tech speak, that's minimum viable product.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And, you know, and part of it is like, okay, well, you know, like how do you even get started? And, again, it goes back to those relationships. Mm-hmm. So, I had somebody call me up and wanted to run an indoor horse show and was wondering how they could use the Legis facility in Illinois. Mm-hmm. And they knew that I was involved in a lot of shows there and was close to Showplace Productions. And so I said, I would be happy to help get this off the ground for you guys. And by the way, I would really love for you to use this new tool that we're building. Mm-hmm. And that's how we're going to make this whole thing work. And so that horse show was the very last weekend in March of 2023. And we went live and it was, you know, relatively speaking, a huge success. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of Horsebot. And we went from, you know, one horse show in our first month to then doing three horse shows the next month. And then eight horse shows the month after that. Mm-hmm. And we just never stopped. And so there's absolutely an element of, you know, sort of like continuing to, you know, build the plane while we're flying it.
Right.
But what's been, a cool thing has been, you know, the ability to launch and then continue to actually be generating revenue,
right.
You know, as we put more and more horse shows on the platform. And again, you know, I really am so thankful for the entire journey that I was on all mm-hmm. of these years being involved in show management and, you know, and really building this extensive network of people that I could then, you know, call upon, mm-hmm. To, you know, to try using the platform.
Right.
And so for the rest of 2023, those were, I can't remember exactly how many horse shows we did. I think about 30 between March and the end of the calendar year mm-hmm. and, across maybe, you know, 8 or 10 individual customers. And, you know, and each of those customers were all people that, that I somehow knew and, mm-hmm. and, you know, and that's how it got started.
Your network is what launches you in the beginning.
It's such an important thing. And from there, you know, we've now grown the platform to over 400 horse shows annually on, you know, on the platform, mm-hmm. That spans across, I think about 100, you know, individual customers. This year to date, we've processed over 30,000 entries.
Nice.
And, you know, and that's just going to continue to, you know, to, grow exponentially as more and more horse shows come on the platform.
So I'm going to back up just a little bit because I've had quite a few people that I've talked to that have been like, oh yeah, I'm thinking about starting a show management platform. It is wildly complex. It's a lot more complex than you just pulling up a phone and being like, oh yeah, I'm entered here. There are so many moving parts that go into this that, you know, one thing I always think about is in this modern day and age, it's very difficult to start a platform like this because one, is the market big enough to sustain that big of an investment that you're going to create that is needed to have a fully fledged show management platform? Or do you do it the way you did and you start out small and build it as it goes? And that's where I think the true uniqueness of what you and your brother have built is that you understood the business, you lived it, and so you know the intricacies that are going in and out of these platforms. A switch, an ad, a cancellation, all these things are very nuanced, but runs the show. And the other thing is, the Backgate guys are the ones that run the show alongside the show secretary. So
yep.
Living in understanding that how those people do it is vital. And then, so the next question that I have is, how did you and your brother handle those complexities as they came up? Was it purely just off of your own knowledge, or was it that, oh, I love this feature, can you add this one?
I would say it's a healthy combination of both. Right. So it absolutely, you know, every step of the way is us thinking about like, okay, well, how would we want to do it if we were those users? Right. Mm-hmm. But there's also, you know, a recognition that for with as much experience as we have, we still haven't done everything out there. And there are still a lot of great ideas that other people can bring to the table, too. So so we have actually benefited from a ton of feedback from other people. Mm-hmm. But what I think is important is that feedback happens in a very authentic and like and maximizing the potential with it. And mm-hmm. by that, what I mean is it's not somebody who's building the software who's going, hey, look, can you explain to me how this works? Because I've never done this before. it's two people who both do that job, who are talking shoulder to shoulder. And yeah. and when that happens, as with, you know, a lot of conversations, when people are having, a more meaningful, deeper conversation, you're just able to get to a place that you wouldn't get to otherwise.
Absolutely.
And the people that are providing that feedback, I think, genuinely become more invested because they can see the real value that they can bring to the table instead mm-hmm. of it just being like, you know, like, okay, like, look, because otherwise secretaries, back gates, you know, a lot of them are going to have the mentality, and rightfully so, that it's like, hey, look, like now this person that I don't know at all is calling me. They're asking for my advice and input. I've got other things going on. I don't think I'm getting paid for this conversation. You know, it's not the best way to go about it.
Right.
And that's why, the platform, I think, continues to shine because it's not just the fact that, you know, Christopher's got, you know, some of the best dev chops out there to be able to build it. Mm-hmm. Lindsay, my sister-in-law, Christopher's wife, and our third co-founder. Mm-hmm. So I want to make sure that, you know, she gets the credit that she absolutely deserves. You know, she's our product designer, mm-hmm. and she's thinking through the design and the UX of things in a way that is above and beyond what we see our competitors doing.
Absolutely.
And, and then I do think that you mix that with our approach of saying, you know, we're going to take this in bite-sized chunks, mm-hmm. and we're going to make sure that it works really, really well for the large number of small horse shows out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and while we're doing that, we will polish the edges and have the right conversations with the larger shows so that we can start to get them familiar. And that was a much easier way to break into things than starting from the top and trying to win over, like, say, one or two big venues. Mm-hmm. And because that's a tall order.
Yes, it is. Yes. When you don't start a business and go right after Google or Amazon. You start at small little ones and you start to build your way up.
That's right. And you know, there's absolutely, and this is an important part of of why we're doing this. Community is our purpose. Mm-hmm. And the platform is never going to be here just to serve horse shows of only certain types. You know, we are out there grabbing horse shows of all shapes and sizes. And there's a massive market of smaller horse shows that, you know, that you and I would never otherwise hear about or really interact with, you mm-hmm. know, because they're just happening in very, you know, other little markets, right? But it's all part of our massive horse community. Mm-hmm. And there's also been, you know, a realization, like from me, that, you know, that those guys need just as much help as, you know, mm-hmm. as WEC or, mm-hmm. You know, or Fox Lee or, mm-hmm. you know, or any of the venues out there that are running rated shows. Mm-hmm. And there's a huge market for that too.
Yeah.
Not that, just for conversational purposes, right? Like, you could also take an approach, or I could say, like, okay, I'm going to slice up the market and I'm going to say that I'm going to go after all of these horse shows that none of us have ever heard about. Mm-hmm. And I'm never even going to worry about any of the horse shows that we are otherwise paying attention to.
Right.
That's such a large market that, you know, that you could have a very successful company doing that.
Right.
Now we want to take it even bigger than that. Right. And, mm-hmm. and touch the community as a whole. But what's really exciting about, you know, that entire concept is that the market is, when I start to explain that to some people, you can see them go, oh my gosh, there's so much more market here than I was thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, like I got stuck thinking about like, okay, but you know, what if Hits doesn't use you? Or, you know, what if WEC doesn't use you?
People,
like,
automatically think of the only ones they know of.
That's right, exactly.
But and they don't know of the Tennessee show that is, yes, running shows every other weekend.
And just to the point, like, I didn't know. An amazing stat that that I just sort of really was able to kind of bring to the surface recently for some other purposes, because we were putting some materials together, is that actually 25% of the horse shows on our platform weren't using any tool previously.
They weren't using anything.
They weren't using anything at all.
Like just Excel sheets and pen and paper?
Excel sheets, pen and paper, maybe Google Forms for their, you know, their online entries. That's fascinating to me. Because going into this, I never would have thought that percentage would already be this high. It maybe it would never get that high. And let's see where you know, it, I mean, let's see it grow even larger as time goes on. But that means we are helping, you know, 25% of our customers that weren't interested in using any of the other options out there.
So describe to me one of these horse shows in this 25%. Is this a weekend show? What? How many horses were coming through these shows? Mm-hmm. What did this customer look like?
The average example of that is going to be a one-day horse show. They're probably hosting it at their own facility, their own farm. Mm-hmm. And you know, it could, the entry count truly varies. It could be, you know, as small as 15 or 20 entries or over 100. Mm-hmm. And you know, but the focus is on a grassroots, you know, entry level of riding. Mm-hmm. A lot of those riders are probably, you know, going to their first or maybe, you know, their first, second, maybe third season of horse showing. Mm-hmm. You know, they're just getting their first taste of it. And a lot of those parents aren't familiar with horse showing previously. They're just getting their first taste of it as well.
Yeah.
You know, those classes are, you know, $15, $20, $25 a class. Maybe they're charging a $15 office fee. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them are just trailer ins, you know, so you're not paying for a stall, or if you are, you're just paying for a day stall and they just charge you $45, you know, and so that's, you know, and these people are probably spending, you know, $200 to $250 at the horse show, you know, mm-hmm. for their whole weekend. And that's their first taste of it. And now we are giving them that taste with, you know, an intuitive mobile friendly schedule of classes that they can mm-hmm. click through. They can easily search for their own names or like their child's name, and they mm-hmm. can see the specific classes that their child is riding in. Mm-hmm. You know, they can see the results afterwards. They love that because now they can look at something on their phone, which to them feels tangible. It's the mm-hmm. equivalent of holding a piece of paper
right.
in today's world, right? And not only are they seeing the results, but you know, just like when we're looking at results on Showgrounds Live here at WEF, like there's ribbon colors that correspond to it, and
yeah.
you know, some of the little things that you know, that a lot of the parents find cute
right.
and you know, we get compliments on.
Well, especially the person that is just starting riding,
yeah,
get a ribbon at one of these local shows. They can go to mom or dad and be like, look,
yeah,
I got this.
One of the things that Lindsay had the genius idea for, and I'm excited to do as time goes on, is then instilling digital ribbons.
Oh.
And so now, you know, you're looking at your class result, right? You click that icon and it exports a digital ribbon right to your phone that you can send to your parent or grandparent.
Oh, nice.
Or post on social media, you know, and yeah, I'm not necessarily advocating for this, you know, because I wouldn't want to, you know, remove ribbons from the horse show, but there could be some people out there that want to run a green horse show.
Yeah.
And, you know, and,
you never
and
have it, yeah.
they only offer digital ribbons. And we're, you know, ready to help them with that.
What's the crypto version of those digital?
Like a ribbon coin?
Ribbon coin.
Yes,
so they have
exactly.
like their own unique ribbon and then they can trade it and sell it. Yeah,
there you go. My God. I mean, we've got meme coins. Just wait till we've got ribbon coins.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, exactly.
I when all of a sudden you were like, yeah, trading coins. And yeah, it's like, here, man, like I'll trade you my Grand Prix first place. And
mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, we had the local Serenity Farm show and I get this own unique coin. I want to trade it for you for $10. There
yeah,
you go.
Yeah. Hey, look, we're on to something, you know. But one thing that I also wanted to hit on those small shows, right? Because I talked about like an improved experience for exhibitors and parents. But then there's, you know, there's the fintech side of things.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that makes a ton of sense too, because we are providing organizational structure, entry management, and a digital transaction processing platform to all of these small horse shows
mm-hmm.
that most likely didn't have one previously.
Right.
And, you know, and those guys were happy to be able to pay with Venmo instead of, you know, just cash or check.
Right.
And you know, and it moves them so that they can better handle point of sale. It moves them so that they can send out payment requests. It moves them into a setup if they want to choose this, you know, that is very akin to booking a hotel reservation where
mm-hmm.
you put your credit card down at the time that you're submitting your entry.
Right.
You know, but that is just to hold the entry until after you're done horse showing.
Absolutely. So the world of payment processing fintech is really emerging. And this next section that I love calling is called breaking the system, which is really what any technology co-founders are doing, is that they're seeing a need. that they want to change, and then trying to change that system. And I feel that that's one of the biggest things that is always outdated when you go to the legacy platforms, is that movement of money. So like, what are the most shocking inefficiencies that you've seen in legacy systems that you're trying to change?
You know, let's talk about not just what's happening right now, but like the environment that I learned how to be a secretary in. So for so long, only cash or check were the acceptable methods of payment. And then the ability to start taking credit cards entered, but it was like an annoying last case scenario. Did you really forget your check? Really, you really don't have your checkbook in your car? Okay, I guess, you know, like, well.
I remember when my mom did show entry, she would actually staple a check to each entry of the horse so they had guarantee that they were going to get paid.
Yes. And, you know, and that's how a lot of office secretaries will actually still manage their checks, right? Because someone will still send in a check or will give a check to hold their entry. And then that secretary will physically staple it to the entry and then go put it back in the file. And, you know, and that's how you keep all that stuff together. And it's ingrained in me too, you know? But with the legacy systems, you know, all of them were built before, it was the understood mode that you could just put your credit card down to mm-hmm. hold your entry, right? So the way that they're adding credit cards in is, you know, an afterthought. Mm-hmm. And it also, you know, creates a culture that we're still in the middle of trying to get out of secretaries, you know, not thinking to themselves, you know, like, okay, well, like, can I get a credit card from them? Mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm. you know, how do I make that easier? Right. And then the other thing that I would say with the legacy systems, and I don't want to like overly bash them, you know, but not all of them are PCI compliant. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and again, that's because they're trying to deal with credit cards as an afterthought.
Right.
And so, you know, that is absolutely, you know, something that cannot be happening. And, you know, and there were people that were dealing with non-PCI compliant platforms, you know, even 10 years ago. I was watching some of them happen myself as an office secretary. And, you know, it was a problem then. I don't think I appreciated, you know, the risk involved.
Right.
And so I just think like, man, especially in today's world, it's just like that can absolutely not fly. It doesn't matter how small you are.
Right. And for people that are trying to wonder what PCI compliance is, don't, without getting into the weeds of it, because it's more legal terms than anything else, describe to everybody what PCI compliance is.
You know, in a nutshell, yeah, without getting into the weeds, it essentially means that whatever platform or software you are using to run credit card transactions and potentially store any credit card information, you know, is securely being handled. And those details are anonymized the right way mm-hmm. so that people couldn't steal that information and, you know, and go use it for fraud or some other type of misconduct.
Yeah.
So, you know, the easy example is when you see that someone has credit card information or it's displayed in front of you, but only the last two or four digits are present and the rest is anonymized in mm-hmm. some way. So, you know, but there for far too long, you know, we have had horse shows running where, you know, sometimes they are just saving those credit card details as like notes in the system. And anybody that, you know, opens up that little note box could, you know, take that and, grab it, throw it right in their pocket and there they go, you know, yeah, off to Mexico or making some online purchases. So that's something that, that obviously we instilled with HorseBot, right? And we have chosen to integrate with Stripe as our digital payment provider. Mm-hmm. And they've made it easy, frankly, to, you know, to build all of those aspects into the platform. If Christopher's listening, he's probably going, yeah, right, Michael, it's really been easy. but we've been able to do it, you know, in a best in class approach, which is the only way, you know, we're going to do it.
Right.
And that I think is helpful because again, there's this element of education that's still going on out there. There's so many secretaries, so many managers that either don't appreciate what PCI compliance means and you know, the risk mitigation that brings to them, you know, or they are just assuming that that is a world that they've never touched before. They've never done credit card transactions. You know, again, the 25% that have never, you know, gotten into using, you know, any software. Mm-hmm. And so on the surface, they might think like, you know, and actually this happens now that I'm talking about it this way. When I first start having conversations with some new customers that come to the platform, at first they'll be saying, I don't want to do credit card transactions. Like, I don't understand that. I'm sure there's a cost. And through my education of helping them to understand that there actually is no cost to them, you know, there's the service charge to exhibitors that you would expect, right?
Yeah.
And then through that and the other protections and an understanding of, you know, of the, you know, at a high level, right? Of like, you know, what it means to be PCI compliant. And so, you know, almost all of them will go, oh, okay, yeah, sign me up.
Yeah.
And we're helping them in a way that they didn't even realize we were going to be able to when they first thought, oh, okay, maybe I'll try using HorseBot.
Right. This actually leads perfectly into my next question is that because the horse industry, as you know, is super traditional, anything that moves along is very slow. What has been some of the pushbacks in adopting this new platform besides the credit card processing?
Right. No, those are good questions. Now, of course, you know, there's always the hurdle of getting over the technical adoption. You know, getting people to, you know, to be comfortable using the software.
Yeah.
What I have learned through, you know, my 2 years of having conversations and getting people to use the software is that, even the most hesitant of users, when I first talk to them, even the ones that are going, hey, look, I've never thought that my tool that needed any improving. I don't know what you're talking about, Michael. As soon as I actually just show them the software and they start actually clicking around a little bit themselves, I almost always get, you know, very complimentary feedback.
Mm-hmm.
And so just like in many other facets of our lives, right? Like we're resistant to using or doing something new, you know, or it's gonna feel uncomfortable that very first time that you do it, that very first time that you, you know, start to put your information and sign up in a new app, mm-hmm. or, you know, or you walk into a store and you order from the screen instead of ordering from the person at the counter, right?
Right.
But, you know, almost everyone winds up having a pleasant experience, mm-hmm. you know, and that's what our secretaries are finding too. You know, so again, why this is all related is because it's those relationships,
right.
You know, so the hurdle to, getting over the technical adoption is continuing to, leverage my relationships and being able to speak to these people shoulder to shoulder.
Mm-hmm.
The other hurdle is that, we're a cloud-based platform.
Uh-huh.
So that means we do need connectivity, mm-hmm. you know, to work.
Yep.
And a lot of these legacy platforms, actually all of them that, you know, that are our competitors are all server-based.
Mm-hmm.
So they can work in a, you know, in a internet-free zone.
Right.
Although, you know, it's extremely limited, right? And so it's like, okay, you can put in some data, you know, you could change some things like the secretary, but like none of that information is being communicated out to,
right.
you know, to the gates, mm-hmm. to, you know, to the announcers, to the exhibitors, right? Like all these other stakeholders that are involved. That, of course, you know, is a hurdle.
Right.
And frankly, it's why we didn't create HorseBot earlier than this. It's why Christopher, you know, didn't actually say like, hey, like I want to move with this idea is because, you know, the internet was not yet ubiquitous enough
yep.
for our sport and enough of the rural locations mm-hmm. that we have. But that has now changed and it is only going to continue to get easier as time goes on.
Mm.
And we've proven that point because there are so many small horse shows out there that are using HorseBot and they're not even using like the Wi-Fi that is at their facility. They're just using the mobile hotspots on their phone
mm-hmm.
or they're using their Verizon Jetpack or their little, you know, T-Mobile hotspot that you can get.
Yeah.
And boom, they're off and rolling. What's been really fun is certain times when some people have even, you know, told me that, you know, one of their hesitations is internet, I'll actually get on them on a video call with them and say like, come on, let's test it out together. We're going to do a video call. We're going to use your Wi-Fi and we're going to see how well HorseBot does or doesn't work while we're also on this video call.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so like we're, you know, we're kind of stressing the Wi-Fi a little bit. And what I've what I've discovered is that in multiple instances, even if things are like a little gummy, I'll say to them, hey, just switch over to your mobile hotspot. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, like, the meeting will get clearer and HorseSpot will be working really well.
Yeah.
And, you know, and so it just goes to show you that, that we're sort of in a period at the moment where, you know, the mobile connectivity that we can use is actually better than a lot of people's, like,
yeah,
what I'm now calling like clunky Wi-Fi, mm-hmm, at, you know, in their secretary office or in their barn office at, you know, at their farm. And so that is the solution to, you know, the connectivity challenge.
Yeah. So I always love to ask this question because I'm a founder myself. Was there ever a moment when you and your brother and sister-in-law were doing this where you're like, I don't think so, this is going to work? And then you have that moment where like, oh my God, this is working.
I'm still having those moments, you know, and it's, yeah, I mean, you know, fortunately there's a lot more of the, okay, this is working, than, you know, than those scary moments where you're like, man, like, you know, maybe this isn't going to get big enough. Mm-hmm. And you know, part of it is, and those moments do come from the fact that, you know, we charge such an affordable rate for our platform. Mm-hmm. And that works really well. But an important part of the model is, you know, us having enough volume.
Right.
So when I have those moments are, you know, the fear moments are when, you know, I'm feeling in a moment where I'm like, oh, I'm not winning yeah, that, you know, that sale, or, you know, I'm like, ah, oh, how am I going to get there with the volume? And,
right,
you know, but, like I said, there's far more moments the opposite, even just last night where, you know, I got a phone call from someone who's really become a good friend of mine. And he has started a new organization and has all of these great horse shows popping up in a bunch of places. Mm-hmm. And truthfully, he's calling me with like updates on two different horse show venues and series that, you know, that are interested in HorseSpot. And, you know, and I know we're going to get there, but, you know, sometimes day to day, you know, you get lost in the weeds.
Yeah.
Right. And it was just so great talking to him, you know, and, his efforts on introducing his horse shows to these new venues and these new markets are helping to bring HorseSpot to those markets too.
Right.
And it's bringing HorseSpot to those markets with more credibility than if I was just still trying to have those conversations by myself.
Right.
And I'm extremely thankful for, you know, for all of that stuff.
It's more powerful than any sales pitch as a referral.
Yes, you are absolutely right. And again, it goes back to just being thankful that, you know, that I established these relationships, and mm-hmm, that, like, thank God I was really liking what I was doing, and, you know, and just wanted to spend my time hanging out at horse shows and talking to all these people and, you know, and meeting them and just learning as much as I could, because all of it is paying off in a way that I never would have been able to predict.
Right, right. And so you, as a co-founder and this sales manager, I would classify that.
Yeah. Yep.
How do you mentally prepare yourself for all of this? Like, do you read books? Do you listen to podcasts? What's your way to mentally get through the struggles of being a founder? Because it's not easy.
No, you're absolutely right. It is not easy. And I would say I don't feel like I am, like I have the best habits at that. Because I'm an organized person, but I am always pretty comfortable, you know, just sort of rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I started at sales, sales on HorseSpot,
yep,
I didn't, you know, go and try to take a bunch of courses to like learn how to be good at that or like read some books. And because I just kind of dove in and started going. And my previous roles earlier in my career, there was absolutely a growing emphasis on business development,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, but it's different. This is a different kind of sales. And I certainly didn't have, you know, any of that professional experience going in.
Yeah.
And it was actually Lindsay who, you know, my sister-in-law, who, sent me one of David Sandler's sales training books.
Oh, nice.
And I started reading that and absolutely fascinated by it. And, you know, then you kind of took someone who, like myself. And, you know, I would have previously said like, oh, you know, Michael, I'm, you know, I mean, like, I'm not bad at this, mm-hmm. you know, and it brought a bunch of tips to the surface on how I could completely change, you know, my approach to selling. Mm-hmm. And that has helped a ton. But why I still say that I'm not the best at it is because there's a bunch more,
right.
you know, materials and books and podcasts. And I am spending so much time, you know, thinking about sales and calling all of these people mm-hmm. and, you know, and sending messages and engaging on social media and, you know, that... I'm out of brain capacity by the time that's yeah. done. And so, and I don't even think about, you know, going like, I wonder if I should look up some podcasts on sales that mm-hmm. I can. And so, you know, so I always need to be challenging myself right. and I need other people, you know, like challenging me. And so, like Lindsay sending me that, you know, that David Sandler book was incredibly helpful.
Yeah.
One of the biggest things that I took away from that is, it changed how I approach HorseSpot mm-hmm. when I'm talking to people and when I'm doing a demo. So instead of now, I used to, you know, meet someone new, get them on a demo, and then I share my screen and I just start bragging about all these things that I think are great about HorseSpot.
Right.
And, you know, talk, mm-hmm. talk, which mm-hmm. as you can tell is easy for me to do.
No, you're an open book. What are you talking about?
And what I realized was that I needed to completely flip the script. And instead, when we get on, you know, these demo calls, I get them to share their screen mm-hmm. and I get them logged into a demo platform of HorseSpot. And then they are the ones holding the reins.
Good for you.
Yes.
Good
and for you know, you. And then I purposefully try to not dominate the conversation by giving them a, you know, a tutorial or a guide through things. I watch to see where they go first. Mm-hmm. What do they start clicking on? And, you know, and I also ask them, what are the things that you were most excited to see about the software mm-hmm. coming into it? What would you say are your top three biggest pain points or frustrations right mm-hmm. now? Mm-hmm. You know, tell me one of the two things that you hate about using whatever tool you're using right now.
Right.
And depending on what those answers are, then those are the parts of the platform that we start to talk about.
Good for you. That is a step up in sales that not a lot of people can figure out, because the magic of sales really happens when they can touch it and feel it and do it themselves. They're selling themselves at that point.
Oh yeah.
And that's a great realization on your part. I have two books for you.
Okay.
One is,
thank you.
And this is not a plug. I don't do plugs in
no,
this.
No, but this is great. This is the help and the challenges that I need.
Yeah. So the first one is actually written by our friend Jeff Pappos, chairman of the foundation. It's called enterprise.com.
Okay.
It's old school book. He'll laugh at me when he hears this podcast and be like, why are you bringing up stuff from the late 90s? But it's a great read by talking about the early internet and the things that he is foreshadowing that are actually happening. So that's one that I would recommend. The other one is by legendary investor Peter Thiel called Zero to One.
Okay.
That one is about how startups break from zero to one. And it goes into all the different tech startups that he's been a part of. Tinder was one of them, and how they kind of figure out how to hit that exponential growth. Mm. Really great spot in how they did different types of marketing and sales approaches to garner all of those, that exponential growth. Because once they left it out there, they did it in such a way where people were the drivers of the growth, not the salespeople. And that's when you can get to that point, it really takes off.
Yes.
So I recommend those two books for
man,
you.
Man, I couldn't agree more. Thank you. I'm gonna write those down when we're done with the podcast.
Love it, love it, love it. All right, so we're almost done here. I wanna take a few more minutes here. All right, so the last part is a few more questions about you, and then I want to finish with one last one, what your vision is for HorseSpot at the end. So the last, these parts are just for you. So what's your favorite horse show experience?
Ooh, my favorite horse show experience? Pennsylvania National Horse Show 2022 with my current good horse, Dee Dee, who I am incredibly lucky to have, and I qualified, I rode in the meter 20 amateur jumpers, and we won our first class there together.
Oh, nice.
One of the top highlights in my riding career.
Oh, that's special, especially at that horse show. Mm. Great memories at that show.
Thank you.
Next one is, what is one thing that you would want to fix in this sport that is not part of HorseSpot?
That is a really great question. I'm so focused on Horsebot that I want to find a way to make the cost of owning horses more affordable.
Good for you.
At some point in time, you know, it's got to stop becoming more and more and more expensive. Mm-hmm. And I would like to see us return to a way where they can still be the valuable assets that a lot of us appreciate and need them to be for how we function, but it can be done in a way where more people are accessible to owning and showing and being a part of our community. And that is only going to, you know, to make all of us that are running our businesses within the industry more successful. You know, if we have more people to be ultimately selling whatever we're making to.
Good for you. That's a fantastic answer. All right, next one. More chaotic. It's tech startup launch or warm-up ring at 7:45 in the morning?
I would take the tech startup launch, okay? The reason is because my horse has traffic issues, and I don't like being in any warm-up ring.
I knew you'd like that one. Final question. What is the vision for Horsebot?
The vision for Horsebot. So look, right now we are a competition management tool, and we are on track to become, you know, the dominant player in that space. Long term, Horsebot is a way to use data about our competitions, about horses, about riders, and to bring them together for us to have a completely enhanced experience, whether we're, you know, watching horse shows or we're using them for other purposes, veterinary medicine, training, you know, like recruiting college level athletes. Using data for a multitude of other purposes, that's part of the vision. The other part of the vision is Horsebot continuing to be a fintech platform to help all of us in the industry. So right now, you know, that is happening through competitions. But what about in the future? For example, one day, the trainers that are putting in all of their customers' entries on Horsebot could then come back to Horsebot to help with billing out their invoices that next week after the horse show is done. Mm. You know, farriers, veterinarians, chiropractors, you know, all of the people, all of us out there, you know, that are running our unique little subset of our business in the horse world, you know, and as much as we need help with, you know, barn management apps and, you know, and a bunch of these other things, the thing that I think people would resonate the most with is helping with the transaction processing and the payment collection and, you know, and all of that. And there's so many transactions that are happening in, you know, in our entire community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and we would like to see Horsebot, you know, be a solution so that you could almost have like a Venmo of the horse world. And, you know, but it's even more than that because it would, you know, it would help with your invoicing and, you know, and do things that even Venmo doesn't do. So
I love it. I love it. Well, Michael, thank you so much for joining me on the Mac Express today. It's always refreshing to hear someone bring true innovation to the sport. To learn more about Horsebot and Michael Lenard, as well as his brother, Chris, check out their website, www.horsebot.net. And if you haven't already used their software, you are probably going to very soon. This is the Mac Express, and this is Michael Cruciati. We will catch you next time.